Let me mention right quickly that we get out 6 issues of the notes per year, 1 each 2 months. And if you are not subscribing to the notes, there are 2 things that are necessary to be said. Number 1, repent. Number 2, talk to Todd. And Todd has the subscription forms out in the display room. And what a joy, what a delight to be at Pearl Street. And Brother Dub, I want to ask you, how old is this congregation?
Just past the Civil War.
I was here when they celebrated 100th year, and I think that was 50 years ago. Okay, about 65. That make it, what, 125 years about? That is something. And the congregation came into being because of some of the very problems we're wrestling with today. When those that went out from us because they were no longer of us were determined to take over everything in the world they could. Brother Jim Moore told me not to soft pedal anything just because he's here. Let me read to you a note. Go with me back to 1938, October. It says here, modernism is removing the ancient landmarks of biblical facts. The spirit of compromise and of halting between two sides is removing the ancient landmarks of biblical commands. The church, therefore, needs constant admonition to contend earnestly for the faith. Christianity, my friends, needs more Nehemiahs to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem, more Ezras to restore the law of God, more Zerubbabels to build or rebuild the temple of God. In your selection of a preacher to lead you and your gesture here toward these ends, you have chosen a man who has combined in himself the qualities of the aforementioned 3. Like Nehemiah, he would rebuild Jerusalem's fallen walls. As Ezra, he would uncover and restore the law of God. Like Zerubbabel, he would rebuild the temple of God. In this all-important work, Nashville, for the 4th time, becomes the field of assertion. And now it's my very great pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to present to you the speaker of this occasion, Envy Hardiman. How many in this assembly did know Brother Envy Hardiman? Great. Now, he was that kind of a man. And what a fitting introduction. These words spoken by J. Leonard Jackson of Franklin, Tennessee. Ryman Auditorium, 1938, Volume 4 of the Hardiman Tabernacle Sermons. In our studies of Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, we're working in the very final segment. That segment represents about 104 years of the Old Testament to history, the Old Testament connected story. Lots of Bible students have never seen the Old Testament connected story. And without seeing it, there is no way to understand the beauty of, the glory of, the importance of God's plan for man's redemption. In 536 B.C., Cyrus the Great, King of Persia, gave the Great Emancipation Proclamation, which allowed all of the Jews who desired to do so, lots of them, perhaps the majority, didn't desire to do so, but allowing the Jews who wanted to go back to their homeland to go and according to the king's pleasure. In short time, Zerubbabel carried 50,000 back to their homeland. About 80 years later comes the great work of Ezra, the priest, the scribe, bringing about 8,000 more back. About 13 years after Ezra, and spanning perhaps a period of somewhere around 12 or 13 years, we have the great work of this man, Nehemiah, and how beautifully, how wonderfully their works did supplement, complement the works of those who had gone before them. We remember Nehemiah primarily because of his great work in rebuilding the walls around Jerusalem. And yet I would pause to inject the thought that Nehemiah wasn't as concerned about the wall itself as he was concerned about the significance of that wall and what it meant to God and to God's people, what it would symbolize to them from that time henceforth and in all of the Bible history. Nehemiah was a tremendous leader. And as I think of leadership in our present circumstances, I have in mind primarily, of course, the elders over the local congregations of God's people, but also I have in mind those perhaps younger men who aspire to prepare themselves to become elders of God's people. And even in gospel preachers, there is certainly a powerful element of leadership. Not that they serve as elders, not that they run the show, that isn't it at all, but they have to be able to inspire, to instruct, to encourage others to qualify for that eldership. Be characterized by that basic desire. Have you ever noticed the word therefore in 1 Timothy 3? It is necessary, therefore, and therefore relates back to a little three-letter word, DEI, in the Greek, or in our English, which means it is necessary, must, it's often translated. It is necessary, therefore, the therefore relating to the desire. Here is the basic desire based upon which a person will meet these qualifications that are set out, and without which they will not be met. And a young man, 14 years of age, you say, can't serve as an elder, but a long time even before that, we can begin in the home. We can begin in the Bible classes and in the pulpits of helping develop within that individual that desire, in the right sense of the word, based upon which he will qualify. But as we note some of these characteristics of Nehemiah, then I want us to think especially in terms of the elders and those who would or will someday take upon themselves, according to God's will, God's process, the responsibility of serving as an elder in a local congregation. Number one, Nehemiah was a man of deep compassion. This is shown as, well, it's shown in many verses. You might want to keep your Bible open as we glance at some of these verses. Perhaps that would be a good suggestion. But in chapter 1, verse 4, the record says, it came to pass, Nehemiah talking, it came to pass when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned a certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. We observe he mourned and he wept and he prayed, the deep concern and compassion that filled his heart because of the job that needed to be done. Secondly, he was a man who recognized his personal, individual responsibility to do something about this situation, to do what he could. That's what God requires of all of us. That's the great basic lesson in, we call it the parable of the talents. Understand, the talents doesn't refer to abilities that exclusively, but the point is included. The talents were given to each person according to his ability. So talents of gold or silver, whatever it is that we have. Put a colon right after that, or a dash or something. And God must somehow be especially favorable toward one talent people, seeing that he made so many of us. But if that's what he gave me, then that's what I've got to use to the glory of God and the salvation of man. My concern must not be so much what the other fellow can do or somebody else can do it better, but what I can do and what I can learn to do. I am responsible before God, not only for what I know, but for what I can learn. Not only for what I can do, but for what I can learn to do that God wants done. Nehemiah recognized the force of that principle. He said in chapter 2, verse 5, I said unto the king, King Ahasuerus, I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchers, that I may build it. He didn't talk to the king along the line of, it's such an important task, it's such a formidable task, it's such a great thing that has to be done. Can't you get somebody, can't you get a group of people, can't you send an entire army? Send me. Send me to do that job, that I may build it. Number three, he sought and he obtained the authority to do the job that he wanted to do, but not only that, the job that God wanted him to do. Look in verses 7 through 9 in chapter 2. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over, that they may let me pass through till I come into Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace which appertained to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. And then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. So he had the authority to do the job that God wanted him to do. He had taken care of this matter before he ever embarked on the trip itself. Number four, he sought no personal gain. He was already cupbearer to the king, Artaxerxes. I said Ahasuerus a while ago. It's the wrong book. He was cupbearer to the king, very high, an honorable position. But now he's concerned about bringing proper honor, respect, and glory to the God of Israel. Note the reading here. Verse 10, when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man. Even the enemies recognized that here is this man who is coming because he seeks the welfare of Israel. Not coming for personal grandeur or glory or praise, but for the children of Israel. Number five, as we look at these characteristics of leadership as seen in this man, Nehemiah. Before taking action, Nehemiah carefully surveyed the situation, gathered the facts, studied the facts, made the proper plans based upon the facts that he had gathered. Look at verses 11 through 15, chapter 2. So I came to Jerusalem, Nehemiah says, and was there 3 days. During this time, he hadn't told anybody what he was about. He says, I arose in the night. And I never read this without recalling the great, inimitable N.B. Hardiman. I have sat enthralled as I listened to him describe that night. I don't know where he learned all these things, but he could tell me exactly where that wall was, where the gate was, where the moon was, what time of the month it was, and on and on and on. And according to Brother Hardiman, it was a beautiful full moon night. Doesn't matter, except it shows a lot about Nehemiah's attitude. He hadn't told about what he's going to do. He begins the inspection tour. And apparently doesn't have a great crowd around him. He has a few. I came to Jerusalem, was there 3 days, and I arose in the night. I and some few men with me, Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. And then I went on to the gate of the fountain, and to the king's pool, but there was no place. That is simply the wall, and this area was so in such a terrible, horrible condition that the beast upon which I was riding couldn't even pass through. Then I went up in the night by the brook, viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate of the valley, and so returned. What you doing, Nehemiah? Gathering the facts, weighing the facts, getting the total picture in mind before we ever lay one stone in place. So tremendously important in leadership. Number six, we note that Nehemiah was a man of prayer. And that's scattered throughout the story of Nehemiah. In this connection, we cite especially chapter 1, verse 4, chapter 2, verse 4, chapter 4, verse 9. Note the reading here. It came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned a certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make us request? And so I pray to the God of heaven. What's he praying about? Obviously, that God will help me to make the right decision, the proper request. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night. That is, a watch against the enemies. Because of them referring to the enemies. Number seven, Nehemiah was careful not to say anything and not to do anything that would jeopardize the work that he was undertaking. Chapter 2, verse 16, we have this reading, the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did, neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. There are some things that are so tremendously important and of such far-reaching consequences that they must be handled so discreetly and sometimes in absolute complete privacy. There are times even when an eldership does not dare make known all of the information that they have, at least at that time, to an entire congregation. They're still working on it. Still working on it. Number eight, he sought the full cooperation of the people in whose behalf he would be working. Chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Nehemiah says, then said I unto them, you see this distress that we are in? Talking to the Jews, his brethren now. You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them, now's the time to make known what this is all about. I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me. I told them about the king's words to me and the encouragement spoken. And the people said, let us rise up and build. Let us rise up and build. How were they able to do this in 52 days, this monumental task? There's the answer. The providence and the power of God in connection with proper leadership. But the big secret is the people, what's the rest of that passage? The people had a mind to work. They said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Number nine, Nehemiah would not be deterred by the scorn of the enemies or by the forces of opposition, but steadfastly looked to God. And we have in mind chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. Note the reading, when Sanballat, the Horonite, Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem, the Arabian, when they heard it, What did they do? What did they say? How did they take it? Oh, they laughed. They laughed. Typical reaction of those who are opposing a good work. First reaction, it's not the only one. And they despised us. Ridicule, scorn, sarcasm. They said, what is this these people are doing? Why, even if they were to build even a portion of a wall, if a fox were to go across it, it'd fall down. See lots of that in my lifetime. Person can't just stand up against an argument, laughter or scorn, maybe. Restoration history, same thing. We saw it, still see it in restoration history. They said, what is this thing that you do? Will you rebel? At least they're putting forth the possibility that at least in our view, you are in rebellion against the king. The king over this territory. Would you rebel against the king? And then answered I them and said, the God of heaven. Even if the local king or the king in charge of that territory were to oppose it, he's still got the authority and the will of God behind him, and we must obey God rather than man if there's a conflict. If there's no conflict, then the Christian will be the very best citizen. The God of heaven, he will prosper us, and therefore we his servants will arise and build, but you have no portion, no right, no memorial in Jerusalem. Nehemiah would not be intimidated by the opposition and false charges and the sarcasm. Number 10, he carefully systematized the work to be done. There's a lesson I would like somehow to be able to embed deeply in the heart and mind and soul of every elder of every congregation or the eldership. Deacons, including the preachers and including the one doing the talking right now. I have trouble right there. There was a long period of time in my life, Brother Eddie Whitten was right there, when I was directing the Brown Trail School of Preaching, teaching 7 days, 7 hours a day, 5 days a week in the classroom, spending Saturdays in recruiting, and Sundays are preaching somewhere, and that was still involved in a way in the recruitment. But that's why we had to have Eddie, by the way. But I remember the elders often chastising me, criticizing, because I just didn't know, and I never have learned it, how to delegate. Now there's some things that I have no hesitancy about in that regard, but there's some things that I just have to do them myself. Nehemiah recognized, and elders must recognize, the importance of systematizing the work to be done, being able to delegate responsibility. But right here we're concerned especially about the systematization of the work. This is stressed repeatedly in chapter 3. Note the oft-repeated significant phrase, and next to him. I'm afraid we read that sometimes and are inclined to just pass over it, but there's a powerful lesson. And next to him is John, and next to him is Bill, and next to him is Tom, and on and on and on. And after Tom, there's tremendous lesson. Every person had a place, and every person in his place had a job to do, systematizing the work. There is great emphasis placed upon definite assignments and specific responsibilities. And it reminds us of the Lord's great statement in Mark 13:34. Relating to the church of the Lord, it is as a man taking a far journey who left his house and gave authority unto his servants and to every man his work. There's a work for everybody who will work. No place in the kingdom with a person who's not willing to work. It's not a place of resting in the shade of the trees. The vineyard of the Lord is a vineyard of intense, constant activity. Nehemiah did not stop or slow down because the work met opposition. He wasn't afraid of their sarcastic remarks. their attempts to intimidate him, and now they arm themselves, and even that doesn't keep Nehemiah from proceeding. And that's scattered over several verses. We cite chapter 4, verse 3, and verse 4, and chapter 4, verses 16 through 18 would help us to get the picture there. Now Tobiah, the Ammonite, was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down to their stone wall. Nehemiah prayed, when there is such are such sarcastic remarks being made about you or about the work that you're involved in or about the cause for which you stand, don't give up and don't be discouraged. Carry the matter to God. Nehemiah prayed. Even when they opposed it with force, Nehemiah says, hear, O God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants, says Nehemiah, wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both of the spears and the shields and the bows and the harbingers, and the rulers were behind all of the house of Judah. They which builded on the wall, and they that bear the burdens with those that laid it, every one with one hand, one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand he held a weapon, a sword in one hand, and then the instrument of the work being done on the wall in the other hand. And the work continued. For the builders, the record says, everyone had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And then this note, and he that sounded the trumpet was by me. If there was a matter of urgency, the trumpet would sound the trumpet, but the trumpeter would do no sounding until instructed to do so. There is power in the silence of the Scriptures. Number 12, he was careful to protect the work and the workers. Chapter 4, verse 20. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us, and God shall fight for us. Number 13, he realized and stressed that he and the people were instruments in the hand of God. Chapter 4, verse 20, note, our God shall fight for us. Number 14, he was a man of confident faith, and he was a strong believer in the providence of God. Note these verses in 2:8 and 2:18 and 2:20 and 4:20. According to the good hand of my God upon me, then I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me. The God of heaven will prosper us. God shall fight for us. Nehemiah recognized, respected, believed in the marvelous providence of God. That's not to say at all that he understood all of the details about it. Brother Carl Garner raised the question yesterday morning, why did David take five stones? Well, perhaps we'll never know the answer, but one thing I know is, he believed in the power and the providence of God, but he didn't understand everything about the nature of God, and it may take five or four more stones. Number 15, he would not stop the work to take time to talk with the enemies. What a powerful lesson. Chapter 6, verses 2 through 4, Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet in some of the villages of the plain of Ono. Nehemiah could see through that. Tremendous quality of leadership. Somebody trying to entrap him, and he can see through it as if through a vacant place in a wall. He says they sought to do me mischief. I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? And yet they sent unto me again and again and again, four times here. Then they sent another time later. And they said, they spoke after the same sort, and I answered them after the same manner. I'm doing a great work here. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Nehemiah was doing everything that he could to continue this work. Oh, yes, there's opposition. But, brethren, you and I need to learn this lesson, too, and it's deeply embedded right here. We have opposition. Everywhere we turn, we have opposition. We are fighting a tremendous battle right now, but we must not let it consume us. The work's got to go on. Number 16, he would not be intimidated by the lies, sarcasm, scorn, efforts to intimidate, coming out against them with actual weapons, and now telling lies, threatened a charge of rebellion that was involved, but now they're lying. Then Sanballat, verses 5 through 9, chapter 6, then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner, the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen. How do you like that for documentation? It is reported among the heathen that Gashmu, wouldn't you like to have the rest of the story about Gashmu? And Gashmu said that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words, and that thou hast also appointed prophets to preach thee in Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah, and now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. We're going to give this report to the king. Come now, therefore, and let us counsel together. Don't you think it's about time you come down and talk with us? Don't you know that really scared Nehemiah? Then I sent unto them, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. Then Nehemiah prayed, now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Number 17, he was able to detect false prophets, and he refused to be made afraid. He says in chapter 6, verses 10 through 14, afterward I came in the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut up. And he said, now this he that goes back to Shemaiah. Shemaiah says to Nehemiah, let us meet together in the house of God. We'll just go into the house of God itself, within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple. Yea, in the night, they will come and slay thee. You've got enemies out there, Nehemiah. You need to come into the house of God for your own protection. And I said, Nehemiah says, should such a man as I flee? Any preachers in this crowd? If you've got the book in your hand, put an S-E-R out in the margin. That means prepare a sermon on that. Such a man as I? Should such a man as I, a man charged with public duties and responsibilities, a man who is carrying a tremendous load for the people of God, a man who is obligated and privileged to be an example for others to follow, a man who is to show no fear even in the face of serious trouble as he strives to accomplish God's will, should such a man as I be characterized by that kind of fear? Go into the house of God, that would be sin. But even if it weren't sin, you reckon Nehemiah would have been interested in following that kind of advice? And who is there that being as am I would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. And Nehemiah said, I perceive that God had not sent them, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. They are enemies. And here is a man now who is in charge of a part of the house of God who is allied with them. Enemies in your own camp. He was hired that I should be afraid and do so and sin, that they might have a matter for evil report, that they might reproach me. Nehemiah prayed, my God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to these thy works, and upon the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets that would have put me in fear. Nehemiah was a man properly concerned about teaching God's people. You have such a tremendous discussion in chapter 8, verses 1 through 9, about this special occasion in which Ezra the scribe stood upon his special pulpit, read from the book of the law, and the priest apparently mingled among the people to help those who were having any trouble to understand what has been read. A tremendous lesson. of proper concern and respect for and actually being involved in teaching God's law. Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood, which they had made for the purpose. Ezra opened the book in the sight of the people, and when he opened it, all the people stood up, and Ezra blessed the people, blessed the Lord, the great God, and all the people answered, Amen. They bowed their heads and they worshiped. And here is the reading of the Word of God. They read it distinctly, and they gave the sense, the meaning of it, and helped anybody who was having trouble to understand what was being said and what a lesson for preaching and teaching the Word. This man, Nehemiah, would not tolerate fellowshipping the sinner. Chapter 13, verses 4 through 11, and chapter 13, verse 28. Before this, Eliashib the priest, having oversight of the house of God, was allied to Tobiah, remember that? And he prepared for him a great chamber where aforetime they had had the meat offerings and the frankincense and the vessels of the tithes and the corn and the new wine and the oil, and what's commanded to be given to the Levites. But Nehemiah adds the point that during this time I wasn't there. He'd gone back to Jerusalem apparently for a short time and then returned, and here's what he found out. For in the 230th year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, came I unto the king. I obtained leave of the king, and that's to return back to Jerusalem. I came back, understood the evil that Eliashib did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber. Tobiah, enemy of God and God's friend, living in the house of God. Nehemiah said, I contended with him. I contended with the rulers, and I said, why is the house of God forsaken? Put another S-E-R out in the margin there. Why is the house of God forsaken? I gathered them together and set them in their place. One of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. There's the connection. Close alliance between the very enemies of the work and of Nehemiah. What'd you do, Nehemiah? I chased him from me, threw him out furniture and all, and brought these proper factors and elements back into the house of God. Wouldn't you like to hear Nehemiah preach a sermon on fellowship? Oh, man, I can just nearly hear that sermon. Nehemiah, he didn't hold to the doctrine of unity and diversity. He didn't hold to the doctrine that there should be no disfellowship for any cause. He didn't hold to the doctrine that, well, if I can't fellowship him in the sense of fellowship with the little f, I can fellowship him in the sense of fellowship with the capital F. He didn't hold to the theory that I cannot fellowship him because he's a brother in error, since all of my brothers are brothers in error. He was deeply grieved because the people disobeyed God. It grieved me sore. I chased him from me. Wasn't a thing in which he found personal delight. Discipline isn't of that nature. It's a serious matter. Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood, the covenant of the priesthood, and of the Levites. Thus I cleansed them from all strangers and appointed wards of the priests and the Levites, everyone in his business. 22, he was careful to point out the sins of the people. His preaching was plain and pointed and powerful, both to Israelite and to non-Israelite. And on, but in a very hurried way, perhaps not the best way, we have at least glanced at 21 or 22 characteristics of real leadership as exemplified, demonstrated in this man, Nehemiah.